You are the Fred Johnson, and he is a skinny of substance.
Oh, okay. Right, well, that's fine. We are recording.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everybody. I think this is an example of why I don't like flashbacks in shows.
Is there a flashback in this one?
Yes.
There's a long flashback.
But before we get to that,
can I recap something from the last episode? Just we didn't really make it clear. If you don't mind.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
The last episode was called It Reaches Out, based on a snippet of conversation from the investigator.
Mm-hmm.
What was Miller is now the investigator. Yeah. He names it himself. I'll read the whole thing out. And then it's just a couple of things to clarify. Nothing big, just to make it clear. So Holden says, you showed up at the exact moment the ring was activated. Is it using you to get to me? It reaches out 113 times a second. It reaches out, but nothing answers, so it builds the investigator. And the investigator looks, but does not find, so it kills the investigator. It kills the investigator over and over, and then it builds the investigator again over and over until it finds a door that wasn't there before. And there's more than that, but the point is that this is a clue to what the investigator is. It's a sort of probe that's been sent by whatever's, you know, the protomolecule itself or whatever's communicating or controlling the protomolecule or whatever it is. So just thought we'd make that clear, because we kind of skipped that a little bit. In favour of talking about Miller, you know, instead of it, because he is the investigator. It's not, you know, he's called himself that now.
So last episode, when Miller uses the phrase "it reaches out," which is also the title of the episode, I swear somebody in the previous episode describes the proton molecule as reaching out, and I meant to go and check, but I forgot. I swear somebody in the previous episode uses the words "it reached out," or when it was on Venus, it reached out to the Arbogast. It was something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right there, actually.
Yeah. Which makes me think that the protomolecule is doing things to people's brains, even people who are not necessarily...
Well, we know it's doing things to
Holden's
brain now, because it tells them that.
We got the science babble explanation of how that works. Which is exactly.
Cool. Which part does Miller say that?
That's previous episode, the stuff.
It's the investigator said that on the previous episode, yeah. But I just read. On this episode, he explains it. On It Reaches Out, he says that.
Okay, but on this episode,
he explains how it's inside his...
It's a bit where Holden says, like, stop talking in metaphors, tell me exactly what's going on. Yeah. And then Miller says some, like, very sciencey stuff.
And he goes,
and then Holden goes, okay, so what's the line?
We're off to the crime scene.
So a crime scene.
Yeah. He goes, yeah, okay, back to this crime scene thing then.
Yeah. Which is a lovely, that made me laugh.
That was, it's the way he delivered it as well. Like
it was very good. Yeah.
Anyway, so. I just want to, this entire episode could have done without the flashback, and it would have amounted to the same thing.
No, I love the flashback. I love the flashback.
Tells you a lot about the character.
Yeah.
But
it's basically telling you all about, you know, Melba, who now knows Clarissa.
Well, first of all, yeah, but
wouldn't you say that the flashback is, in a sense, Clarissa explaining it all?
Oh, shush.
Even I got that reference.
Oh, that is disastrous. No, because I knew, you know, like all you needed to know is that she's Mao's daughter, other daughter that has been mentioned before.
No,
that's not everything else you need to know. No. You need to understand her relationship with her father, her relationship with her sister, and the fact that this woman, the other woman on the ship, Tilly, knows who she is. But somebody out here that knows who she really is the point as well. There's a lot of things going on there.
Yeah,
Without the explanation of the relationship with her father and her sister, she's just a monster.
Yeah, exactly.
Like she wants daddy to love her. Daddy's been a cunt to her for her whole life, to always telling her she's not good enough. Julie's better. You're shit. I mean, the line. What's the line with the parties? What do you do? You plan parties and then walks away from her. Yeah. Like, and she everything she does, she to please her father.
She offers to take over the racing thing, and he just laughs at her and says, "Don't be ridiculous." And,
yeah. So she's the daughter. Like, Julie is the rebel who's like always pissing her father off, but her father kind of likes that because, you know, that to him that says, you know. She's the one who's trying to always trying to please her father, and the father's always just shitting on it. Like, that's important for me.
Yeah, it's really important. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot happens because if you just tell that instead of showing that,
that's what they did. That's what a flashback is, though.
No, it's not. It was showing. It was a showing flashback.
No. Flashbacks don't count as showing. Flashbacks are telling. You're just telling in a different tense. Totally.
Hex always had this hard sort of line on flashbacks, and
awful storytelling.
I get it to an extent. I get it. I think lazy flashbacks
are bad. This is not a lazy flashback.
No.
Right, how are you going to get all this information across then? Rewrite this to get the information across for us.
Well, first of all, if that kind of stuff was necessary, would definitely have included it further back in the story.
How are you going to include it further back in the story? You didn't meet her until now. If you had the Clarissa Mo stuff like back in series two or something. There would be no mystery about who the fuck Melba is and why she's.
There is no mystery. They've got the flashback is completely.
I don't think the point is the mystery. I don't think it's ever like, oh, who's she? Why? It's more like, why is she doing? Why is she doing this? Is more important than
it's why she's doing it is important.
To me, this is the correct use of a flashback. Like, they could have put this stuff in season two. But it'd be like, why the fuck is this here? Why are we learning about this woman? Yeah. And then like two seasons later, it's like, oh, she's back. That's weird. Like, no, I think this is the correct way to do it.
And how do you get the father part in as well? You know, and the fact that Tilly knows her, okay, that could have been done slightly differently, but I think it's better than somebody saying, I think I know that woman. You know, it's the kind of acting Alex would have done instead of a flashback.
We disagree.
Christopher, is what we're saying, I think.
Yeah, I totally get it, but like, no. but no.
You have a distaste for flashbacks.
This is the exact reason why I don't like flashbacks.
I think this was absolutely fitting nicely.
Why is this, explain that, what's so bad about this, basically, is what I'm asking, I guess.
I find it's basically someone sitting down and going, okay, so basically we're bringing in this new character because Julie Mao's, you know, he's basically part of the, you know, Julie Mao's daughter wants to get her own back type of thing. Like, they basically just sat down and said that. Like, they've just added so much padding to make it less explicit, but it doesn't make it any less explicit. It's telling, not showing. Exactly. That's exactly my.
No, it's. I mean, I disagree.
I thought the acting between Jules Pierre and Clarissa was what made, you know, I thought that was what filled out her character more.
I don't see how it's tell, not show.
I don't see how it's tell, not show when it's actually showing you.
Yeah, I get what you're saying about, like, here's. It's basically like. I'm thinking of it in sort of a game context, like here's a new character and here's their backstory for half an hour, kind of thing. Like that's what you mean, right?
I
understand that. I don't agree about it being that, but I understand what you mean.
Like, if it was that important, weave it into the previous narrative. They could have done it a million and one ways. They could have done it with Mao talking to May in the last bit. I mean, I know this is different books, so it's not necessarily.
But it is the kind of thing that would, I think, work better in a book. Like a book, you have a little chapter about a character you've never met before and what their life was like, and then it works better in, or it weaves into a book more seamlessly. But for me, this is the best way of doing this in the TV show as well. Like trying to get all that in previous seasons when you've got so much else to think about and you're like, why do we give a shit
about this other sister's relationship with her father? Nothing came of it. That's what I feel like you'd have been moaning about if it was in the previous series. seriously, I think you would have been, and I would be as well, but like, because like, well, it doesn't pay off, so what's the point?
I mean, I'm not entirely sure why I care about this woman's backstory now. Like, it's not a weirdly complicated one. She's trying to please her father, and now and avenges incarceration. That's all, like, it really.
But seeing it, seeing how devastated she is when her father just keeps rejecting her and telling her how her sister is better than her, like, that's.
I think it's important. Impactful. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Emotionally impactful than just telling you. Also, the other thing to remember, Chris, bear this in mind, is that we are getting an entire book condensed into half a series here. So I was actually, well, this is what I was going to say before you started like ragging on the thing so bad, you beast. I was surprised at how soon this happened. I thought this happened a few episodes on. Before you find out who she was.
I think
that's maybe what it is that you've only had one episode or two episodes to know her.
I like the pacing of this. It does feel like they're cramming stuff in a bit because it is half a book in, or an entire book in half a season.
Yeah.
But I like this pacing. I like how
I like this pacing. Yeah, stuff's happening.
So,
we'll see if this unfolds and justifies it as it goes. But I think the strongest point that you made was like, if you're cramming it in, then shortcuts are going to be made, right?
But like I say, otherwise, what was the alternative? Is to put her relationship with her father and her sister way back in series one.
You could have weaved it in a cleverer way.
As I say, write it for us then, Chris. If it's so obvious to you that there's a better way of doing it,
it's a convergence of two things for Chris. I think it's his quite hard stance on flashbacks, plus he just isn't engaged by this backstory, right? I am and you're not.
Yeah, I'm definitely engaged with this story.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I can't rewrite a clever plot line that is on a level of The Expanse.
I'm not asking you to write it cleverly or perfectly. I just give it the broad strokes, weave
it into existing plot lines. That's too broad.
You know,
that could have been done. That could have been done.
Right. Anyway, let's move on from that. Before we,
of course, it could have been done because like, if it doesn't, then it would have been an impossible story to tell otherwise.
If anybody else has any opinions on this, feel free to feedback at thepolarbear.co.uk or leave a comment on the video.
It's not as bad as a dream sequence, I'll give it that.
I think for the amount of time it took up in the show, it got an awful lot of information, and it got it over emotionally. Her relationship with her father, on just written down on paper or spoken in a few lines, would never have been so impactful, as far as I'm concerned, as seeing it. But let's just wait and see. Maybe it'll pay off more in the character later than you might.
Yeah, maybe it will.
I'm not really taking that as a future vision thing, though. I really think that.
It came quicker than I thought because
it's only the third episode she's in, but. I also, you know, the revelation and everything. But no, anyway. Okay.
There goes a fucking start of my notes then.
My notes fucked, isn't it? No. Well, all I've got at the beginning of the note is the notes about Melba. It's actually Clarissa Mao. She's trying to please her father until he knows who she is, till he knows this woman. So that's obviously going to be an issue. It is in this episode. She's like, oh shit, there's somebody that knows me here.
And I even quite liked
the little laughter segue, and that's how she recognised her, that it was her laughter from her sort of fake laughter from the past.
That was a good segue. I'll give you.
But you know, fuck me. Fuck Clarissa. Maybe you'll feel better about it later, but maybe you won't. I don't think anything. There's a lot of cliches, right? But cliches are cliches because they're the hammers and screwdrivers of the toolbox. You're always going to need them. You're always going to use them for something, but you don't. It's overuse of them that spoils it and makes it a bad thing.
I mean, they're not overusing them on The Expanse. Yeah,
exactly.
But...
So that's why I didn't think this was so. I didn't find it jarring.
We need to leave it. We're going around in circles on this. Like,
okay.
Chris, you're wrong, but that's okay.
But I will say first time through, I hated Melba's character. Like, because she's horrible. But at this point, she's horrible. She's a horrible, selfish, spoiled little shit.
Yeah. But the thing is,
but it is another. It's an, like Avicerella, like Amos, like it's another character that I come to love. Like and so when rewatching, I love her at this point. I'm like, no, that's justifiable. I understand it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's yeah, and all I mean, well, I think the second episode where she shows remorse for what she's doing, even though she's doing it, kind of builds a bit as well. But you know.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, yeah. Moving on.
To be clear, I never think I don't really think what she does is justifiable at all. But she's a very fucking damaged person, and I come to love her.
Yeah, there's more happening in the future with
Does Avicerella know that she's got a halo? She does it again.
Quite possibly, yeah. It's the kind of things that
interesting though, because if I can't remember if we ever saw President Mann sitting in front of the thing. Because if we did, that logo would have to have been a lot higher to give him a halo. So it's quite, and he, you know, it's interesting that, because how...
I mean, she's a smarter politician than him. She might have been like,
let's frame this.
It is also like the show. She looks like a saint in a Brock painting anyway, with the, you know, with wearing a sari, looks like, you know, the kind of clothes that they would have in the Renaissance paintings and Brock paintings.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the show is leaning into her saintly aspect. It does that a lot. It leans into religious imagery a lot.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah. Of course, then we're met with the other religious guy, aren't we, Mr. Dogcollar?
He's a priest, yeah. Although, what religion? Because he's married, and
he looks like a Catholic priest, but a lot of Protestant stuff tends to lean into the aesthetic. But then he talks about mega churches, which isn't really a very Catholic thing. But he could be the Catholic Church, and they've allowed them to marry again.
Yeah,
or something.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, and also, so he's the one that Tilly's family are bankrolling, isn't it?
He doesn't so he's like, he's obviously scared, right? Like, he sort of excuses himself, even though
you're talking about when he got a chance to stay.
When he got a chance to stay, and he says
like, I've got a family, I'm afraid, I don't want to leave him without a father, all that sort of stuff. Which is kind of,
but then he justifies it. Well, he rationalizes it to himself that God is not with us here.
Yeah,
it's the right. He's justifying
false
his fear.
Idols and all that.
He's
stuff.
He's afraid, and like it's not unreasonable to
religious
be...
imagery to try. And
it's not unreasonable to be afraid in that situation. Like, he's not a fucking coward. Well, right? If I could get the fuck out of there, I would get the fuck out of there.
No, I'd stay on. But like, I get why you'd leave.
Yeah, but we see the crew member trying to escape and stuff as well. You know.
Yeah. But no, especially Anna, knowing everything the proto molecule has done so far.
Yeah. You don't want to be hanging around.
That's not.
We saw what happened on Eros. We saw what happened to the. Well, that's what the ensign says, isn't it? We saw what happened on Eros. We saw what happened on to the Arbogast.
In fact, that's not a correct way to look at it, because that was the proto molecule under the direction of evil people.
But they don't have all the information, really. No, do they? You know, they're not going to have as much information as we are as an audience. You know.
Yeah. No, I'd be getting the fuck off that.
So I've written down here about that section of the show, Anna seems to be more interested in Discovery than even her family at this point, which has got kind of hints of Clarissa Mao, which has got hints of
Savage Industries. I like that.
That's who she works for. It's got hints of Alex, I think, Anna's storyline. Alex is running away from things. She's running towards something. I would say that's a slight difference.
Her wife pisses me off. This is another character that irrationally pisses me off, somewhat rationally. Mm. Her wife gets on my fucking tits, because there's that bit, like several episodes ago, where Anna's talking about coming home, And because, you know, this is pointless, politicians are dicks, I'm coming home.
Yeah.
And her wife says to her, only come home if it's the right thing for you. If there's more for you to do out there, stay out, stay there.
She does, yes. And then and she then, basically goes back.
Two episodes that, later, meow, 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 why aren't you home yet? Meow, 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 meow. Like, fuck off.
Yeah, she's...
I mean, I'm guessing that's a bit like... Is that not what it's like being married?
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, totally. It's what it's like being in a relationship. But no, pick one. Either you care about, you know, I mean, this is a, you know, a huge thing for me, blah, blah, or you don't.
Yeah. Like, too realistic, like, isn't it? Too realistic.
Yeah, it's too real.
Too real. Yeah, so basically, is Anna putting Discovery over her family, or is she just...
She's only away for a few months. Like,
yeah.
The kid's going to be fucking fine.
And also, it is like the edge of the world, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's the... Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. They are going to somewhere where they think they could just never come back from. I mean,
sure, but it's like, it's literally like she says, it's one, you know, one of the greatest things that's happened in human history in terms of like mystery and like, if she is brave, she's a brave woman. Mm. Like, if she's brave enough to want to be there and face it and see what it is, like, support as a spouse, you should be like, that's fucking cool. You're amazing. Yeah, go for it.
Mm.
Don't
but
be
a I mean, it's hard emotionally, either. But you know, like, you get past it, right?
Like, no, come home. Who's going to mow the lawns? Wah, 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 wah. Fuck off.
Wow.
Yeah. She's already sent more money back home than they would ever have had anyway, so.
Yeah. Anyway. So Ashford basically he sort of he's the one that picks up on all the little details initially. I quite like that.
Mm.
He's the one that we can get this. Okay, it's nice to know we can get things go in and come back out again.
He's a smart cookie.
Yeah, he's a sharp.
Like, socially as well, he's great with people. And I have a question about that later on.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, he's the one that notes that you can't get a signal, but at least we know we can get physical objects in and out. And obviously they're trying to work out why, and they get that. You know, well, that's the first thing on the Thomas...
Mm.
The John Thomas Prince. Or whatever. The Thomas Prince, yeah, that's the thing on the Thomas Prince that they're all discussing when you first see them on that show. It's like, why didn't the ship pancake when the blah, blah, blah dead and all that, you know?
Years ago, I had an online friend who was genuinely called John Thomas. That was his name. And he lived on Beaver Close.
Beaver Close?
That's Beaver Close. John Thomas on Beaver Close. I mean, that's golfing, I guess, but, you know.
Well, you know.
Oh my God! Right, there's a person on one of the nearby local forest councils, and their surname, and I fucking kid you not, on this one is Git Good.
I had a friend called Greg Blower back in the day, back when I was a teenager, and his father's name was Richard, but he went by Dick. He went by Dick Blower.
Did he? I mean, lean into it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I'd totally ride Dick Blower.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, there we go.
How does it? Do we know how you get Dick from Richard?
No. Rick Dick. Like, Rick. I don't know. I don't know where the D comes from.
Rickard? Dickard? Dickard.
Yeah. Not at the moment, no. Okay. Do you guys have anything else to say about the... You said you had something else to say about Anna's thing, no? Is that that?
No.
I'm finished with the notes on that. Right, well, can I come to Holden a bit? I'm jumping about all over the place today.
That's right, jump away.
You're going to struggle to come to Holden if you're not even hard yet.
That's true. Two little. I never really thought of Holden. And I mean, I suppose he would be. It makes sense that he is. What's the word I'm looking for? Not nostalgic. What's the word I'm looking for?
Semaphore? Iguana?
Lionel Richie?
It's a bit like nostalgic, but it's not. It's, you know, when you keep
reminiscing.
Yeah, when you're the kind of person that looks back and keeps, you know, and oh God, what's the word?
Tell us regarding what, and then the word.
Yes,
might
that made more sense. Yeah. So, two things I noticed about him: he's got like a wall screen with a picture, and it's got like a default picture.
Sentimental.
Thank you.
Sentimental.
Thank you. The screen, like his, you know, the default picture on his wall screen when he's not using it as a computer, is a picture of the house, the farm.
Oh, that's yeah. Nice.
Although it's all gone crazy because everything's buggered up on the ship at the moment, but it's still recognisable. Yeah. And the other thing is he's kept the XO badge from the Canterbury that he never actually wore.
Oh, really?
He's kept that because you see him with it in this episode.
That's sweet. I also I like that we're back to the quixotic hero Holden that we all love.
Yeah.
And not going off the rails Holden. Yeah.
Well, until the end.
No, but that's him pursuing not one of the Also,
there is a halfway decent Alex bit in this episode as well. The bit where Alex goes to see if he's okay and he's like hesitant and Holden opens the door and just doesn't say a fucking word because he's like looking around and then he goes, have you seen Miller? You know, like, Miller, like, you crazy bastard, has Miller been back? You know, and he's looking around, and he just goes,
yeah, I love it.
And then he just goes, Miller!
Yeah, he goes mental, yes. And he goes away, and he's like, okay, yeah.
But this is the writer's being dismissive of Alex again, just slamming, not saying a word to him, slamming the door in his face.
Yeah,
I thought that might be the case, because it felt a little bit like abrupt for Holden usually.
Yeah, but Holden's even with Amos, he's been a bit kind of like but he's not very communicative with anybody at the moment because he's too obsessed with trying to get Miller to speak to him, you know.
And obviously very very confused and worried about what's happening.
Okay. Well, that's right at the end. I'll leave that for later. I want to do a shout out to the fans. Glitch Guru, because Glitch Guru makes little comments that are so on point all the time and really makes an effort with the stuff.
With the belt of stuff.
The belt of stuff comes up a lot. So well done, Glitch Guru. Yeah.
Is he watching Space Versions or is he just enjoys The Expanse?
Well, he must know The Expanse well enough because he's mentioned things that are in episodes that we're.
But do we know whether he's watching? We need to ask him. We need to ask him whether he's a watcher.
Do they comment under the video?
I can't remember if Glitch Guru's commented or not. In the Discord, they've said quite a lot.
Right, Discord. Yeah, I'm not going off.
Yeah. So shout out to Glitch Guru.
Yeah.
All right.
Watcher. Right, okay. I seem to be driving here and I'm kind of worried that I'm driving us into a wall or something.
Into the ring.
Well, the other thing we find out if we're looking at my notes then is 18,000 kilometers per hour is the speed limit at the moment, according to this.
So I got an idea about this, but I was waiting because I didn't know if there was a relevance to that speed in real science. Like if there's a scientific. So what it could be is that because they're wibbling with space time and whatnot, that they might have slowed down the speed of light by a lot to that. So that they can make either like a universe, a small universe in the bubble.
So you think it's some sort of constant that they're.
So yeah.
It's 1.5 times the speed of sound ish. That's the closest I can.
Well, that's very slow.
Is it?
No, it's not 1. Based on my googlings, speed of sound 1,200 kilometers an hour, roughly.
My brain can't do numbers that big.
Hang on. Problem is we learn the speed of sound in old money.
Spear did you take away?
Hmm?
What sorry?
What spear did you take away?
that's a deep cut.
Mm.
The anthropologist with the cultures who don't count with numbers and
Yeah.
good cut.
Does anyone? No one else is going to get that.
What did you say?
It was on Space Virgins, wasn't it? That we talked about that. I think.
Oh, it was. Yeah.
What did you say? 1,200 kilometers an hour.
Yeah.
It's a bit less than that, but yeah, that's moderately.
I've got close. It says 1235. It says here. This is just googling.
Well, it's 1,000. It's 1,192 kilometers an hour, not 12,000. That would be ridiculously big.
Oh, what's the speed limit? 18,000.
18,000 kilometers per hour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you're like a whole two orders of magnitude, three orders of magnitude difference there, yeah. I wonder, when you're talking about that, I was thinking, am I just getting mixed up with the speed of sound in miles per hour?
Yeah,
because that's how we learned it at school.
I was thinking 1,800, yeah, okay.
No, 18,000 kilometers per hour. So still fast for space, still pretty fast, spaceship sort of speeds.
Slow for their tech, but fast for ours.
Well, no.
Fast for us.
But, 18, I don't know.
18 times the speed of soundish would be very fast.
My query, or my...
15 or 16 times, yeah.
I mean, my thought is that, like, they can't see stars in the bubble, right?
Yeah.
So all they can see, they can see the stars outside through the gate, and it's distorted around the edges like a lens. And inside the bubble, all they see is the sort of blue gas sort of thing as an edge. And then in the center, there's another bubble, smaller bubble, which is made of the same sort of gas-looking stuff. I'm saying gas. Well, I'm just giving it a reference point.
The nucleus.
The nucleus?
Doesn't Miller call it the nucleus?
No, the nucleus is in the middle.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There is one in the middle. Yeah, there is a.
Yeah. Oh, right. That's what you're referring to.
We're inside a big bubble.
Yeah.
All we can see outside the bubble. So all we can see outside is the edge of it with the gas, or the gate, as we were calling it now, because. Chris thinks he's caught me out with something. It's like, oh, you're so pleased with yourself, isn't that?
Orifice,
yeah, the sphincter. Yeah, so you've got the thing. You get the ring. So we can see through the ring to stars. Then we're inside. We look like we're inside a big bubble of some sort of bluish gas on the outside. Then in the center, there's a smaller sphere, or it looks like a small sphere of the gassy stuff as well. And now I'm going to have to look at the transcript to see what you call, because you said nucleus, didn't you? Oops. Shit, I'm trying to...
I think Miller does refer to it as the seed crystal. I think they refer to that seed crystal language again, or something along those lines. Maybe nucleus.
I'm pretty sure I heard the word nucleus.
Yeah.
The bad news is this one hasn't been transcribed. So I don't, at least not here, so I don't have the transcript.
If you got a subtitles file, you can just search for it.
Honestly. No, I mean, it's not. I mean, if you want to, feel free.
Yeah, I'm not fast.
I don't have a subtitles file. I've only got subtitles on the video.
I'll have a look through it then. If I've got one.
But I can. Let's have a look. I can. Computer chirping. I like the big computer panel that Mao lady's on. Savage lady. That's kind of...
What's
that's
the word you're looking
like
for? Nucleus.
Nucleus.
We've got to go. Yep, we've got to go. Come on, to the station, to the nucleus.
Cool.
That thing in the middle of the place. Yeah, it's Miller. Well, it's the investigator that says to the station, to the nucleus. So he calls it a station and the nucleus.
The windows to the wall.
Sorry, a station and a nucleus.
He calls it both things, yes. To the station, to the nucleus. That's what the exact words he says.
Okay, a station is interesting. I didn't catch that one.
Ooh.
So does that mean like a station is in a place to go, like a dock or a train station where you go to there and then it takes you to the gate?
Time for our cum faces. I mean, our poker faces.
It could be station, just as in the root of the word stationary. Just the thing that doesn't move.
Mm-hmm.
The fixed point.
Yeah, it could be. But I reckon this is Mass Effect Relays.
Is that the game that I've got now?
Oh, you bought it?
I don't know. I've got no. I got a present.
Oh.
Somebody wants me to play.
Who gifted you that?
I think it was Andrew wanted me to play it, and it was on sale.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is. If you can cope with the BioWare writing, it is very expensey in some ways.
Mm.
Or expensive. I mean, vice versa.
There's stuff in here that they've just literally taken out of Mass Effect.
I would say, I think, yeah, possibly, but also it's Mass Effect deals in very tropey trope. That, you know,
oh, it does, yeah.
Common like, in sci-fi.
Yes, it is Mass Effect Legendary Edition. There you go.
But I've never played it,
so yeah. Might happen soon.
I would enjoy seeing you playing that. Okay. I would.
Ooh. It's a sort of adventure-y thing, yeah.
It's RPG, spacey, sci-fi, RPG adventure, yeah.
Well, we'll soon find out.
Mm. It's really good. I know it's like it is tropey, but the bit where they're talking in the lift when they're going into IO, that's straight.
Yeah, that feels like a nod. Yeah, yeah.
That's yeah. Hang on a minute. I gotta drink because I'm
just doing my life. Arse, girls.
Okay, hang on a minute. This one is this. Is this one up here? And then if I do something like that. Oh, that maybe? That'll do.
Right, yeah. I'll tell you what, we're cutting through this quite quickly. So we've had an argument and we've talked about it quite a lot in the episode. We're missing something here, you know. We've got to talk about, like, you know, something more benign, like bodily fluids.
Well, I want to talk. I want to talk
or something. No, I know there's more to talk about in the show. I'm just messing.
I want to talk about Ashford.
Yeah, yes, I like Ashford. I want to talk about him as well. Yep.
So specifically, his social intelligence.
Mm.
So hang on, let me.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense because as his history as a pirate. I feel like you couldn't make it as a pirate captain without being pretty socially adept, right?
Yes.
Charismatic. But,
okay, so he's high charisma. So when he's talking to Naomi and he's talking about, are you trying to go back to something or are you trying to go back to the ideal of it? And he's talking about, because he knows she wants to go back to the Rossi.
Yeah.
Mm.
And he uses this language of, like, you can't really go back. You romanticize the past. You can't, you know, you got to move forwards. You can't go backwards. Mm. Is he trying to get her, like, on the superficially, he knows she's trying to leave and he's trying to get her to stay?
You see, I didn't read it as that. I did the first time. I did the first time read it like that. Like, he was trying to persuade her, look, no, don't look backwards.
That's what he's saying, because he's talking specifically. No, I think he's more specifically talking about. But I think, yeah, on later watches, I'm starting to think, is he what's the word? Backward psychology, reverse psychologying her, and is he actually trying to get her to leave?
No, I don't think it's either of those. I think he's just being sort of almost fatherly and giving her some advice and helping her to make up her mind. That's what I feel. Like
I absolutely think
you think he's got one way or the other agenda.
I think on previous watches, I thought he was trying to get her to stay and it backfired. And she, you know, what he was saying about the Rossi, she applied to the OPA and she was like, I'm romanticizing.
She literally
says that to Drummer. But I think he's actually trying to get her to leave for. Partly because I think he cares about her and sees that's what she really wants. And also partly because she's making Drummer less amenable to him.
Once you bring Drummer in, it's a bit of a triangle where they should have a two-way thing, and that should be it. She's like an extra XO. Basically,
she's kind of in between
him and Drummer a little bit.
Yeah, Drummer's going to Naomi for stuff she should be going to Ashford for.
Yeah,
So I think Ashford is incredibly socially intelligent here. I like him a lot.
I'll come round to your way of thinking on that now. Yeah, yeah, okay.
That's yeah. I mean, that certainly makes a good point.
Yeah, once you factor in drummer as well, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
I think he does care about. I think he likes.
Well, I think he generally cares about Naomi. Yeah.
And I think he sees that that's best for her as well. I think he sees that she's not fulfilled here. She can't really do that. She wants to be on a small ship that she can fix and do important things. She doesn't want to be a small cog in a big machine. Yeah.
Well, you can sort of see that when she's fixing the redundancy, electric redundancy things.
Also, they've just tried to shoot her friends, you know.
That's actually a like, she's probably not going to be a constructive force on the ship with that kind of, that sort of heat in the relationships now.
Yeah, and then that's what drummer says to us: "Hate me later, fix the ship now, or work now, or something." Yeah.
Hate me later. Yeah, work now, hate me later. I love that. But when we get the goodbye between Naomi and drummer, and it's virtually made explicit that they're lovers, but we've never seen that. I kind of hate the show for that they seemed afraid to show them as lovers, but
meant to be lovers or if it was meant to be a really strong sort of sisterly bond. Really.
I think they started fucking.
It does feel that there's a bit of that, but then would she feel that's being?
I think the show does make that explicit later.
Right. Okay.
I think it does. Yeah, and I think they started fucking. What, you know, when they were playing the racquetball game on.
Yeah, that was very homoerotic. You know.
Yeah.
Sapphic erotic. I don't know if there's a rule about that, but
I mean,
word-wise.
I don't know. I feel like this is. I mean, like, I feel like this is typical slow burn lesbianism.
Well, I think it's what's the term for when they're too cowardly to show it? I mean, J.K. Rowling, retroactively, he was gay.
Queer baiting, or is it queer washing?
I think it's a related term. Later shows, they just show it. They're just like, these people are in a relationship. They love each other. But at this point, they seem a bit afraid to do that.
I don't know. I'm torn between the two, whether or not they're just scared of lesbians or if they're
scared of lesbians.
If this is typical slow burn, lesbian romance that happens.
I mean, based on the lesbians I know, I am scared of lesbians as well. So maybe it's understandable.
Yeah, fair show. I don't know. I was once in the drag bar Dorothy's in Swansea, and there was a full up brawl in the women's bathrooms. I don't know if that's because it was Swansea or because it was lesbians. Or maybe both.
I think there's a lot of the Swansea in there.
So
there's a couple of things I've not taken notes of that I do want to talk about. Nobody was saying anything, so I just kept talking.
Yeah. Do you have more talking to do?
Yeah, sure.
Go on.
I feel on the spot.
On the spot.
Amos and his interrogation techniques.
Love it.
Yep.
Absolutely love it. And he does the right thing. This is him making smart choices.
Oh, I'm getting a call from my mother. Excuse me.
Yep.
Sorry, you guys keep going.
All right.
Is that the Imperial March for his mother?
Yes.
Bomb, 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 bomb. That's great. I love it.
Right,
we need to go off topic for a little bit then.
Do you want to know what I'm eating?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So I got these as a present over Christmas. This is a vegan version of a crunchy.
Okay. What's not vegan about a crunchy? Milk?
A milk chocolate, for the most part. I don't know. It would just be that,
wouldn't it?
I don't know what the crunchy bit of the crunchy is made out of.
It's bonfire toffee, basically, isn't it? Which is sugar. That's basically just sugar and baking soda, really, I think.
Bonfire toffee.
Yeah. You know bonfire toffee?
I have never made a bonfire toffee.
Cinder toffee, I think it's also called. It's just what's in the middle of a crunchy, but it tastes very soda-y because they use soda to make the bubbles. I assume with crunchies, they use just like nitrogen or something to make the bubbles.
Oh, interesting. Just
squirt nitrogen into it.
Okay. But yeah, no, very nice, actually. Probably nicer than a crunchy, but they were quite expensive.
Never a fan of crunchies, honestly. Too sweet.
They did like sort of mock-ups of like other well-known style chocolates in a vegan form. I haven't cracked into the wafer one yet because that's the one I'm really looking forward to.
With your vegan chocolates, I think I've said this, like, just make all chocolate vegan.
Yeah, all Oreos.
I'm sure there are things you can put in other than milk that give it that milkiness. Like,
oh, absolutely, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They're on the whole. Well, they're usually slightly darker, not as dark as dark chocolate.
Yeah. But which is nice. Like, I'd like all chocolate to go a little bit darker.
It could, but I don't think there's a reason they necessarily go lighter. I think it's just the way that people's expectations or something to that line.
Yeah. Like, and I would imagine, like, vegan, if you just make chocolate as vegan, it should be cheaper as well. Because I imagine whatever you're using instead of milk is probably cheaper than milk, I would imagine.
I have a theory on this. A conspiracy theory, if you will.
I mean, milk is quite heavily subsidized, isn't it?
But... yes. And I think that, so a lot of things that go into things, everything from certain types of crisps to a lot of stuff involving chocolate or this kind of stuff, is like milk dust. And I think I think it might be like a subsidy grab, as it were, because milk is very difficult to keep in the market because it goes off so quickly. So it has to be pretty fresh and pretty good to go. However, milk dust lasts for fucking ever. So if they can get the subsidies from making milk, but sell it as milk dust.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they can get, as long as they can shift, find a way to put it into all kinds of things, it's probably a lot cheaper because of the subsidies.
Yep, that makes sense.
They've probably like found a way to wangle it, which, yeah, like, I mean, I'm not usually one against subsidies, but I feel like that's sort of manipulating the system a little bit with milk dust, because it seems
that's
like...
there's always going to be... We should just be self-sufficient on food. We should subsidize all farming the way we subsidize milk.
I mean, quite frankly, I almost feel that if you go into a supermarket, you should be allowed, or like it should be, you know, like through taxpayer funding, you should just be allowed to have enough to live. Like anything that you need to live, it should really just be free. You know, maybe have a limit on how much you can take at once.
Yeah.
Or have a certain, like, have a card that you can use up to, like,
The problem with that is it gets towards what America does with, like, food stamps, which is, you know, essentially telling poor people how to spend their money rather than just giving them money.
That is true. But at the same time, it just feels like, but, like, it's like air, right? Like, it would be silly if everyone had an allocation of air. So I kind of feel the same principle, and water to a degree. We have that like recognition of water. Yeah, you do pay a water bill and everything, but like I'm pretty sure there are rules to say you can't actually turn the water off if people aren't paying.
It's very cheap. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like
I don't think you can turn it off. Yeah.
You know, food should also food should sort of follow suit in some way.
Yeah. It's one of those which end do you fix it on? Do you make sure that people have got enough money that they can just afford as much food as they need, or do you give them food?
I don't know. I don't necessarily care as providing the two things either whichever one you pick works.
Well, the problem with giving them money, and it's a problem that UBI is going to face if it comes in, is just they'll put their prices up.
Yeah,
everybody's got more money, so they'll put their prices up. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that happens not just with UBI, but general.
And I mean, aside from if everybody's got more money, there will be more demand, and therefore, blah blah blah. But I'm talking, on top of that, they'll put the prices up. You know, the same way they do. You know, as soon as rent is in any way subsidized, like renters just put the rent up to swallow all of that and leave poor people just as shit off as they were before.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I almost feel that if there was a way that you could do it, like, I mean, there should definitely be a price cap on rent.
Yeah, oh, no, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I've always thought Meals on Wheels?
Yeah.
I don't know if they even still exist, but it was essentially free meals for pensioners, right? Just a van comes around and, you get a bit of a choice and, you get a meal, you get a hot meal. That should just be for everybody who wants it. Just make Meals on Wheels good and make it for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, if it was for everyone, it would be good.
Yeah. It would have, yeah. Yeah. Because I'd get a hot meal just delivered to your door. Like, you know, maybe probably not every day, but, you know, say 3 days out of the week or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to, yeah, something like that. You know, I mean, if it comes to food, like, it's not, as long as it doesn't end up getting thrown out, then it should be distributed relatively freely. And I don't mean the
van should come to everybody's door. I think it should be you opt in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they knock at the door, if no one answers, then they move on, right?
Yeah,
like that's,
yeah.
Although they could even do the same thing with microwave meals. Like, I'm sure you could do healthier if you do microwave meals. Like, I'm sure there are healthier ones.
I think microwave meals can be healthy because you can just microwave a meal that you've made. You know,
exactly.
As long as it doesn't have to have a huge shelf life, then
And I feel, I feel that there is, I know that there is like a bit of a trend now in supermarkets where they do like takeaway style stuff in frozen, you know, high quality frozen meals.
Yeah.
And I freeze a lot of things because it's just me now. So it's like, you know, it's either check out the frozen veg aisle or buy as you go, which ends up being quite expensive. Frozen veg is great for, if you just want, like, you know, especially onions, like frozen onions, frozen chopped, diced onions, so easy to,
I assume it affects the texture a bit with onions. But if you're going to cook, if you're cooking them anyway.
Not to the point where I really notice, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my unrefined palate or whatever. But that
seems fine to me.
Maybe if I was doing something fancy, I might try raw onions. You know,
fresh
onions, but frozen, you know, and often I'll get stuff from the freezer aisle and I'll just freeze it through the frigid aisle and then put it in the freezer. I know sometimes you're not supposed to freeze this, or you're not supposed to freeze that, or you're not supposed to cook this from frozen, but I fuck the rules.
I've heard about especially people like freezing eggs.
Freezing eggs, eggs last
apparently, eggs keep very well anyway. I think the problem is, anyway, no, this is probably far too off track. We were just going off topic while you weren't there, so you didn't miss anything.
Hang on a minute. I want to hear more about these frozen eggs. What's going on here?
I think he's thinking about the fertility clinic.
I went down a wormhole because I saw a post on Fedi. Somebody saying these people who are glassing eggs are idiots. Like, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what is that? So I looked into
that's
it.
What
and
I yeah, know.
So glassing eggs is where you put eggs in water and you add lime, and it essentially creates an impervious seal on the egg. So it's watertight. So essentially the eggs will last forever. The problem is you're creating the perfect environment for botulism.
Yeah.
And so if there is botulism in the egg when you put it in and you store it for six, because these can store for years. When you come back to it, it will be botulism up the wazoo, and if you eat that egg, you will die. But there's all these people. It's an old technique, and there's all these people saying, "My grandmother,
eggs and all that stuff."
That's very different. No, that's very different. But this is the people going like, "Oh, my grandmother did this for 80 years, and she was fine." And they were like, "Yeah, it's maybe like a 1 in 1,000 thing, but if you eat that egg, that 1 in 1,000 egg, you will die." We've got better ways of preserving eggs now, essentially.
And also, like eggs, like I'm assuming that there's
who has to store their eggs for that long anyway.
It's people with chickens. They lay a lot in the summer, and they lay less in the winter. So if you're only storing them for a few months,
that's not the same as storing them for, you know. But it's still too long to just normal storage. Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know about normal. Normal storage probably has the same botulism problem. If it's just on a shelf, if that egg is clean, you're fine. If the egg's got botulism in it, I imagine that's going to breed while it's just on the shelf.
Right. So generally,
be eating eggs, is what you're saying. Because I might get killed.
No, only if they've been left for a long time. But freezing them is fine. Freezing them, you halt the growth of the botulism. Because the problem with botulism is you can't smell it, you can't taste it. It doesn't look different. There's no, to our human senses, discernible difference.
Okay, so hang on. So is the moral of the story glassing eggs is fine?
No, glassing eggs is bad.
Okay, but you said freezing them is fine.
freezing, because that halts freezing them, you know, like takes their
metabolic rate. What's the difference between freezing them and glassing them again, just so we're clear?
Well, because it's that cold, like it just takes the metabolic rate of everything down to virtually nothing. So nothing
can grow.
So just freeze eggs.
Yeah.
That's fine. If you just put one egg.
The best thing you can do is freeze dry them, is the best thing you can do. Which you then rehydrate, but that's good for like scrambled eggs and stuff. But obviously you can't. It's essentially frozen scrambled eggs. You can't make a fried egg out of dehydrated eggs.
Mm.
So apparently these glassed eggs are only really good for scrambling anyway, because the yolk goes very weird. But yeah.
Okay. So freezing them, you take one egg, put it in a freezer, and then glassing them, you take egg, put it in water with lime.
Mm-hmm.
And then freeze all
lime,
that, right?
Lime the chemical, not the fruit.
My head it was a slice of lime. No,
so yes, was I, yeah, yeah. That's yeah, why yeah. I was wondering how you got this magical seal with lime. I thought lime juice is going to, you know, that's not going to do that. It's going to soften the shell, isn't it? Oh yeah, lime. Okay, fuck then, me. Yeah, that's seriously.
Yeah, and it's also
that's sealing up an egg. Seriously, that.
Yeah, 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 and it's also lime. Lime is also quite toxic.
Yeah, yeah, you don't want to be.
So,
yeah,
like in you know,
a bit
in
of
the
shell
in,
and you're gonna be like,
yeah, in the 18th century, it was a pretty decent, you know, technology allowing, it was a good way to store eggs. You know, with a 1 in 1,000 chance. I'm making the 1 in 1,000 thing up, but you know, there's a chance this egg could be botulismed or all to shit, and you will die.
Because glassing it. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Mm. It was Jason on Feddy who got me onto that. It was just a thread I read, and he was, yeah, because he's a farmer and he's into food preservation, but he's into doing it safely. And there's a lot of
those farmers that like just spin the roulette wheel of life.
Well, there's a lot of like YouTube and Instagram stuff about I've started glassing my eggs and it's fine. Like I've had 30 of them, yeah. And it's not me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not. It's not a good idea.
And all these people going on Instagram and TikTok doing the glassing, they've probably only they're not years into the project yet,
no,
they've
probably done it once because it's they're an influencer thing, you know?
Well, again, they probably know all people who, you know, they, you know, the normal for them, and you know, that old person got lucky and, you know, didn't, but like there is a chance, and it's a relatively high chance. It's a similar one with people canning butter. Like canning butter is becoming a thing, and that canning, if you do that in butter. Very Yeah, because then it will keep for, you know, forever.
Mm.
But again, it's the same thing. If you do it in very safe, you know, in factory conditions, you can keep it safe. Mm. But at home, like, you can't guarantee that some organism's not getting in there that will.
Can you can margarine?
I think margarine actually goes rancid like way quicker than butter. And rancid margarine smells fucking appalling. Like butter's, again, like eggs. It's fairly. Long life.
I'm just thinking to like reduce the plastic packaging rather than or can you have like metal tins of margarine?
For that, it should just be like what it just about was when I was a kid, where you go in and you know you just ask for like this much ham or this much cheese and it's just wrapped in like waxed paper. Yeah, like yeah. We just need to go back to that. Yeah.
Yeah, but with butter, with margarine,
how many people need this extra storage thing anyway, you know? This seems like fads rather than, you know, requirements any kind. Right.
Yeah, it's people. Well, I mean it's a response to the cost of living going up partly. It's a bit faddy.
Bulk buying in the capitalist world doesn't get you anywhere unless you are way up the
I think with
chain,
some of these it's
so
butter it's butter they're producing themselves. I remember watching a TikTok that Danny linked me, and it was this person who was like, I went to the store for butter, and then I realized cream was on sale. So I bought like 8 gallons of cream, and I've been churning it for like, and they were churning it for like 12 fucking hours to get like, and they got a lot of butter. They got more butter than they would have bought for the same money, but they were churning it probably two-handed churning it, because there was a lot of, you know, like, yeah, so much churning.
Were they tasting it?
Make sure
the butter
okay.
That. That one tastes good.
And looking directly at the
that one's gone over my face.
Yeah.
But yeah, so much like unaccounted for labor to produce this butter. Like, if your time has to be worth literally.
That's the thing that people say. Yeah, that's the thing that people always leave out of any of the make it yourself things is your time. Mm. You know,
And if you enjoy it, I'm not like we're not against people making stuff themselves, like you know. Making stuff.
Themselves. No, that's fine. But it's like people who say, "Oh, right, there's no point in buying models anymore because 3D printers exist and stuff." And it's like, you know, but how many people can actually make a good model, and how many good? Because as I understand it, 3D printers are just as reliable as fucking inkjet printers. Things can go wrong. And you've got like half a model that's useless. You know, half a model.
I'm gonna give a shout out to Jason because he's not in the Discord or anything. He's just somebody I follow on Fuddy. But Jason at 4oclockfarms.club, and he's pretty cool. Post some interesting stuff.
Is 4oclock Farms like a single user instance or?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's a farmer's instance, which in itself is fucking.
That's
cool.
Legendary.
That's why I love the Fediverse. You know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you're not going to get that on some big, unless they sort of charge you for sub rooms and things. You know, you're not going to get it on big centralized thing.
Yeah, 4oclock.
Floor o'clock.
He's the boss.
Small, highly moderated server run by some wheat growing queers on the plains. So yeah, queer farmers on the ferry. I love it. How many users? Oh, it's 8 active users, so yeah, it's fairly small, but yeah, that's cool.
Fairly small, but I mean, that's 8 more.
But Jason's great. Yeah, he posts lovely pictures. He lives on a farm. He farms. He posts pictures with his dogs and stuff. He's a very interesting, cool fella.
I'm literally going to follow him right now because I like there's a lot of farmers around here, but they're so stuck in their ways that anyone who's like doing anything interesting with farming, I'm interested. Like those people that are cracking the John Deere operating system on the tractors,
you know,
right to repair and all that kind of stuff. Because John Deere, man, like I've been to some shows where John Deere shows off their wares, mm-hmm. and like, oh my god, I've never seen combine harvesters the size of the things you can buy now. Literally, they're like the size of 3 houses,
yeah.
and they cost at least 6 figures. You know, yeah, like,
I mean, they're not made for a normal working. They're made for farming conglomerate.
But they do show them off at the smaller shows. I think more of it is an advertising gimmick.
If you go to a computer show, you're expecting to see the latest supercomputer as well as all the stuff you can actually buy and use yourself. You know,
there's also the thing that farmers do. I think this is more of a thing in America. I don't know if it's still a thing. I assume they still do it, where it's expensive farm equipment, like a bunch of different family farms will chip in for the equipment and they just share it.
Yeah, well, that's cooperative. That's how a lot of Asian shops operated in Scotland for years. Is, you know, and the Asian community would have a lot of shopkeepers and a lot of them would be maybe some family relations and stuff, you know, because people bring their family over with them, don't they, when they move to a new country. So anyway, the Asian shopkeepers would get the benefit of being a chain without being a chain by just being cooperative.
Yeah,
I see. You know?
Yeah.
Do you know? Have you seen the premier chain of like local shops?
I really need a piss. I'm just going to hop off. All right.
Drew might not know of them anyway.
Yeah, that's it.
Do you know?
We've got Premier. Yeah, Premier. Well, there's a chap I know. Speaking of Asian shopkeepers, there's a Sri Lankan shopkeeper I know who has got. Is it better to call him Tamil shopkeeper? I don't know. Whichever way around it is. Mm. He's from Sri Lanka. Point is, he's got quite a few shops, and some of them have got like these sort of, you know, co-op-y chain that names and other ones don't. So it's interesting. He's on more than one of those as well. They're not all branded up the same. So it's just, I don't know what to make of all that, you know.
Well, tax breaks or something. I think there's a lot of like membership discounts because. With the Premier, the reason why I was reading an article about why these premier chain seems to have popped up really quickly and moved really fast, and it's partly because they have like a membership sort of franchise scheme where you can get like really quite cheap goods, but you have to like basically submit yourself quite a lot of your business over to the franchise.
Yeah, it's like Spar used to operate, that kind of thing. That's how a lot of these things worked before. Spar was one of them, and it was, you know, it was you had to have certain things on show, and you had to have certain standards, but then you would get the own brand stuff and everything, and it was, you know, and discounts on the bigger brands and things like that. Yeah,
Yeah, and it kind of feels a little... I mean, you can see why they do it in terms of incentive, both the chains and the franchisees.
Yeah.
But it does kind of feel like a system that locks the independents out of the market, which is...
It does a bit, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
but I mean, nice, like I say, we always had a spa on the corner of our street. You know?
I've got there's a spa around the corner from where I am. Yeah. Oh no, it turned into a Londis.
Is that another one of those same things?
Yeah. The shop opposite me. My family used to own that, actually, my grandparents way back in the day. It was a general store for the longest time, and it didn't become a spa. It was just an independently owned general store up until probably late 90s, I think, wasn't before it became a spa, which is held out for a while.
Mm. Yeah. But I'm guessing it's like, you know, they sort of fold to the franchise, one of the franchises, just because it's like it would be impossible to keep the prices low.
Well, I think some of the franchises, you know, accepting that we're living within capitalism, I think some of the franchises are actually good. You know, they give you the stuff you need. They regularize everything. Mm. You know, they take care of deliveries, and you just, you know, you just run the place. Like, I prefer it. Obviously, if the whole thing was organized like a co-op, that would be great.
Mm. There's a lot of, in my area, there's a lot of housing estates being built, and also in sort of the towns in the area, because of our proximity to the M4. And I am shocked that all of these houses are being built up, but no corner shops or basically any infrastructure at all. But I am certain if you got a corner shop in some of the further reaches of the residential estates, you'd be printing money. It'd just be like... I know the startups probably quite a fair bit.
I assume they do less business, like all. I assume they do less business than they used to because of the internet. But like, you can't replace just when you need
milk
something,
and bread.
That milk and bread, backy drinks, you know, snacks. Like, you know, when you just want something now,
light bulbs, maybe. You know,
I mean, the spa shop across the road seems to be doing all right.
Yeah, the spa shop around the corner. I'm never on Doesn't matter what time of day I go in there, there's always some people in there. And the post office bit as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I use the post office. Even with the internet, if you've got a post office on your corner shop...
And it is a bit of a community focus as well. You know, you get you know, the ladies standing there chatting and the men chatting as well. And
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's the one thing that I think will... It defies the high street as well, which I quite like.
Yeah.
I think British, particularly boomer generation politicians... They fetishize the high street in a way that they try and sell it as the center of a town.
They fetishize something that it was for a period of maybe 100 years,
really.
Yeah, yeah. Rather than just like saying, okay, so retail, you know, the kind of retail that defined the high street then is a thing of the past. Let's turn it all into, you know, public workspaces, studios, libraries, like public stuff. That'd be great.
Mm. I mean, if you look at parks,
kitchens that people can just use, presentation spaces, like a park, the indoor equivalent of a park.
The indoor equivalent of a park, yeah, totally. Have it as a kids' play area for fucking. I don't care, but it's just like it's this idea that like I don't like the central part of a town to be the bit where you spend the money,
I don't want it to be just shops, especially.
Yeah.
Like when it was a grocer, a butcher, you know, that sold you the stuff you need. That's cool. But when it's, you know, a clothes shop, a cheaper clothes shop, a bookies, an off license, you know, when it's stuff that's just.
In fact, I'll tell you what I'd rather it be. Right, scrap all the fucking shops, turn them into flats for all I fucking care, and just have the high street as a market square.
Pedestrianize it, make it leafy.
And just have
I'd rather it be like public communal stuff, but
I mean experiment with it, mess it up, see what but the thing I always feel like gives me a little warm glow in my heart is on a nice day how many people use the parks. Loads.
People love parks, and
people love parks for different reasons, right? People like taking their kids there, people like having a kick around with football there, people just like cycling or walking or just getting out of the house.
I would take
because local councils put stupid amounts of money into the high street, and it all just gets either frittered away or gobbled up in one way or another by the chains.
Yeah.
Take all of that money and stick it just into fucking parks for all I care. Do you know what I mean? just in parks. Have a gazebo or like a bandstand or something, so you've got an indoor bit, because let's face it,
and bring back parkies.
But they're not going to do that. Park rangers. They're not going to do that.
I would I would totally vote for someone that brings back parkies. They can have little hats, little ranger hats.
Yeah. It's a cool little get up. Yeah.
Right. Well, sorry about the interruption and the messing around, but it did give us a chance to talk about various subjects.
Well, we needed the tangent. We were far too on topic.
Yeah, we were on topic. Yeah.
We had the tangent bit in the middle, which is unusual for us.
Yeah, we usually start or finish with it, and now we've got to get back to the point. Well, I mean, yeah, you were talking about, you've already talked about Ashford. And we got to the point where Naomi is leaving the Behemoth.
Yep.
And going back to the Rocinante.
I knew she was going to come back.
She's got to. Yeah.
Yeah, well, she still owns a quarter of the ship.
Well, yeah, they made a point of that she was on a leave of
absence. Oh, you were talking about Alex interrogating the prisoners as well. I don't think we covered that fully.
Amos.
Oh, right.
Yes, I do that so often. It's four-letter names that begin with A.
All right, Andy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Adam interrogating the prisoners.
Yeah. So Amos tries one of his normal sort of approaches as well. He tries asking them out, right? Gets nowhere, and so he's right. I'm going to take these two to a nice quiet room and talk to them. Yeah. And it's Amos that comes up with the clever solution at the end as well, which I find very, very. Yep. It's heartening as a development for Amos, and it's also very pleasing. The way they got to that solution at all was quite pleasing as well. Yeah. You know, of course, they're at the mercy of two people that have been manhandled by Amos, but you know, I think they're going to, you know, realistically, I think they're going to tell the truth. Yeah. Hopefully, as you know.
And I love when Amos is like, I was gentle with them.
He was,
I love that. And he was, by his standards, he was very,
very gentle.
He was always gentle.
Yeah, there's no marks on him, there's no injuries, you know.
This is a little bit like someone had to come in and I still feel bad that they got sent out.
When somebody asks, why did you send both of them? And he's like, well, he's blind. I can't send him out on his own.
His hands are covered by the gloves. But I like how he's like, get your stuff on, and you know, and he's like preparing it all, and he's like, get your stuff on.
He's clearly he's saying it to them in a nice way. He's like, lids on, come on, lids on.
Yeah.
So the idea then is, because at the you're initially supposed to think, oh, they're getting spaced.
Yeah,
because that's what Alex thinks is happening. He says, you can't space them. He goes, yes, I can. He flatly says, yes, I can.
So he's sending them off. Is it back out the gate?
Back to UN ship is the idea. To the Martian ship?
Martian ship.
The MTRN
ship.
Hang on. Sangu? Gilly Gilly Watsa? Fuck's sake, it's not highlighted. Why is it not highlighted? It's usually highlighted in this thing, but Behemoth isn't either. Where's Behemoth? There's Behemoth. There's Thomas Prince. Oh, come on.
Do you know there was a... My local sort of area has a raft race once a year. And a couple of years ago, they had a raft that was really quite well made called the Thomas Crapper. And the theme of it was a toilet.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking of that whenever I see the Thomas Prince. I could try and see if I can find a picture of it.
All it says here is release them into the void with their vac suits on. But yeah, the idea is that the MCRN ship will pick them up.
Yeah. Also, before we completely leave Ashford alone, the other bit of his sort of social intelligence is when Drummers starts giving that like amazing rousing speech as they're going through the gate,
which is the last thing. Which is the last thing that Glitch Guru did a take on, which is why I was saying they're obviously watching it either at the same time as us, or they know it well.
And shit like that, especially when the stomping starts up, that works on me. I'm like, yeah, I'm fired up. But Ashford sees, like, right at the beginning, he sees, okay, this could be a moment. This could be like a crew solidifying, like defining what we are kind of moment. And he's like, yeah, okay, I'll start banging on something. And then he starts, you know, shouting things. Again, like, I think he's very socially intelligent, very smart. I like him a lot.
Yeah, I do. And because I know at the beginning, you're not sure about him because he's from Dawes. And...
I think that's still the case. I think you're still taking him on trust, but... He seems, to me at least, this is me pretending I don't know what comes. Like, to me at least, he seems on the level.
Who's this?
Sorry? He seems on the level. Yeah,
Ashford.
Oh, Ashford. Yeah, Ashford. Right. Yeah.
He seems on the level. He seems. I can't find any picture of the Thomas Crapper.
There's no specific thing other than just they get released for the Martians to pick up is basically all I'm finding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, yeah. So at least they're not being spaced, and I mean that's less reckless than what Drummer was doing with shooting the Rossi.
How do you mean?
Well, like Drummer was intending to shoot the Rossi with that torpedo.
But Ashford says he would do the same thing,
and he would do the same. Yeah, which is, I think. You know, that's fair. Like, he didn't weasel his way out of his genuine feelings. I wouldn't have done it, but I...
I'm not sure you would have been wrong.
In that situation, under those pressures, knowing what it's five lives to save thousands.
A ship full of people,
No, I know it's trolley problem, but also... Yeah. I would have said, like, that's obviously not him. Like...
I don't think Drummer has enough information.
They don't have enough information to make that distinction, really. Plus, it doesn't really matter what anybody on the Behemoth thinks, whether that's true or not. It's what the Inners think, and that they will.
Yeah.
The message is, we're speaking for the OPA. I'm speaking for all the Belt. That's exactly what the Inners hear. That's what the Inners are. You Inners are always like that. You're always just. Mm-hmm. It's what I was saying about Avasarala's attitude to Naomi and Belter's in a few previous episodes. It's very, you know, yeah. As soon as something happens, because, I mean, this is another thing Ashford said was like, it won't matter what actually happened. It was somebody who was a Belter who went through the ring first, and they're going to say that was, you know, that we did that deliberately, and it's the Belter, and they blame the whole Belt. And they fucking were sitting on the Thomas Prince saying, yep, the Belters have fucking done this, blah, blah, blah. You know, he was spot on. So
yeah.
I think they had made the perfect... Well, it was a difficult choice, but it was the only real choice they could make.
I mean, they didn't try, like, maybe they could have, you know, done a wide band and say, he does not speak for the OPA, this is an OPA internal matter, like, give us half an hour to sort this out. Look, before you start shooting.
No, but they're blown up, but he said, but right then they've just blown up a UNN ship, and they say they're going to blow up more. So are you going to give them half an hour to think about it if you think everybody's to blame? Which is what they do, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying it would necessarily work, but you know, I'm just saying, like, potentially maybe there were other options, but in the heat of the moment, given the time constraints, yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, I don't think I would have made a difference.
It's like, but the UNN ship got blown up by a bomb, and like there wasn't a target lock, a black box, you know, paper trail or anything like that. It was clearly someone had planted a bomb there, and
yeah.
Whilst you could say, well, that's a Belter style thing to do, because it kind of is, the fact that, like, no Belter ships have actually been seen firing anything, I would hope, would give
they never said it was anything about firing weapons.
It was terrorism.
And he threatened more terrorism. So. Well, he didn't really, but you know what I'm saying. The message threatened more terrorism.
I my gut would tell me that the military would be able to work out that was fake.
Again, though, we're talking about there and then, whilst they're in presumably in danger.
Yeah, but then you've got to verify that a message is real, otherwise you end up playing into the hands of a a deception, i.e. was
There are other things they could have done, but we're looking at it from a very much a hindsight 2020 point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, who knows what we'd do in when faced with that circumstance exactly. But I don't know, I just kind of feel like before you start firing at anyone or anything, just check to make sure that you should be firing it.
I think Hamish is right, though. Like, this is a kind of military situation, and they have said we're going to blow up other ships. Like, realistically.
Yeah, but it's not the same kind of military situation as it might have been sort of near the Eros thing.
It's more like a bomb has gone off in town and somebody released a video saying you did it, and the cops come around your house and you try and go like, oh, no, it wasn't me. Give me half an hour to put stuff together to prove to you that it wasn't, like, they're just, no, fuck off. You're nicked, mate.
Yeah, but they're not going to kill you. That's the difference.
Only because of the different situation, right?
Well, if they were to arrest Holden...
If they say it's somebody and they're running through London with a backpack on, they are going to shoot. They are going to
Okay, so a more realistic... Okay, so the US Army is invading Iran with the tentative assistance of the Pakistani military, and then something blows up and this video comes out saying, well, the Pakistani military did this, we're on Iran's side, you know, like, are the US military going to go, okay, fair, we'll give you time to clean this up, and or are they just going to start blasting?
I might take the highly controversial view that the US military might be a bit gung-ho. Not in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, I like you say, the hindsight thing is fair, because, like, I don't know how I'd react, but I really, like... With the knowledge that I have right now, it just feels like...
I know what you mean. I'm sympathetic to it.
If I got an email from one of you two that seemed really out of pocket, I would check.
But they don't know it. First of all,
yeah, but that's because we all three know each other.
I think it's a good term.
The three of us.
But it means something else. It already means something else.
Yeah.
No, out of pocket just means, oh, what's this? Oh,
no, but it already has another established meaning.
Yeah.
What is the other established meaning?
Like paying for something out of pocket rather than.
Yeah. Context determines.
Yes.
I just wanted to continue that discussion. I didn't think we were going to derail into another.
And then Drew just brought that derailment out of pocket.
No, Chris, that's
the wrong context. I misused that context. Sorry.
Out of the blue, out of nowhere. Like, we've got
loads of ways to say it. Don't reuse one that means something else already by convention.
Although I agree that it sounds more like that than it sounds like what it used to mean, to be fair. It does. It's a better phrase for that. Maybe we should adopt it for the new meaning and pick something else for the old meaning.
Anyway.
Okay, I've pissed you both off with that.
No, that's all right. You're fine. Fucking hell. Yeah, the difference is, Chris, that the three of us know each other. And we're talking about huge crews of ships with captains that might not know each other, and there is a tension already because there's three different fleets out there.
Heavily armed sides that don't trust each other in a tense situation.
And one of those ships gets badly damaged by a bomb suddenly.
And doing something that aligns with the two other sides' prejudices about that side. Like, it's like, well, of course the OPA, you got to do that.
Yeah. But this is...
Their immediate worry is, right, let's rescue the people from their ship, let's get it away from the rest of the ships because the reactor might blow up or something. You know, there's a lot going on in here. There's an awful lot
If I'm not to speak for you, Chris, but fundamentally what you're saying is you just think people should check before they kill somebody.
I mean, that's
fair enough, but that's not really the reality is much more complicated and difficult. But I agree with that as well. Yeah.
I get that, like, when you're the captain of a ship, it's not just your life that you're bargaining with, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You've got to remember they've got, and the people that are in charge of the UNN and the MCR's MCRN's fleets are in charge of not just one ship, but all the ships in that fleet. And as Drew points out, there's two different sides. It's a, you know, remember, it's not one side and the other. It's
also got to remember when it very first happened and when the message went out. Even Alex and Amish were like, "What the fuck is Holden done?"
What is Holden done? Like, yeah.
Yeah, they weren't like,
because he's been acting irrationally as well. Yeah.
And he has done out of pocket messages before, like in the first episode. Is it the first episode the second episode? Yeah, where in episode season one.
I don't remember that costing him any money up front. I'm just soothing myself by enjoying pictures of Anna
Drummer.
No, Anna Hopkins, who plays the reporter woman.
Oh yeah, she does have an attractively big nose.
She does,
and she's got freckles, and I like freckles.
But
a combination of a nice strong nose with a kind of pointy lower face, pointy chin. Almost, it's a bit witchy in a way that I find attractive.
I see the Jules Pierre Mao's daughter is one of those people that to me looks very attractive on paper, but for some reason, like the mix, but just doesn't quite do it for me in the same way. Maybe that's a character thing. Maybe her character is
maybe.
Nice. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's obviously a very attractive woman, but like, doesn't have that zing, that zip, Do you know what I mean? Like, do I feel? Am I?
I think you've been. I think you've been out of pocket here.
We're down with the Gen Z.
Skibbity skibbity.
I
don't know what skibbity means.
It has something to do with.
I've heard of it. I don't know what it has.
I think it's got something to do with a series of short films made in the Garry's Mod game that involve characters who are they're a head coming out of a toilet.
Okay, and they say skibbity.
I think.
Cool.
Maybe not, but I think skibbity is part of that.
I'm so not bothered about it that I didn't even bother looking it up. So that's where I am with it. Sometimes I'll look these things up, and other times I just go.
I'm not a person who's like, oh, the kids are all stupid. Like, I think, you know, kids are kids always, and you know, they're probably smarter than us. But I do get to the point where even when I look up what the word means, I don't actually understand the definition. You know what I mean?
It might be a nonsense word, right? Okay,
I think it is.
I think it is.
It might be a nonsense word. Skibbity? Yeah, I think it is.
Skibbity toilet, season one full. Might be a name, like a proper noun. Skibbity toilet, Wikipedia page. It's a Machinima web series released through YouTube, produced using the Source Filmmaker. Skibbity toilet humor has become viral as an internet meme.
Okay,
so there we go.
According to Urban Dictionary, skibbity is the word used to start a conversation, and then it judgmentally says specifically a conversation filled with brain rot. But yeah, it seems to be just what's up, you know, skibbity. How you doing?
Oh yeah. And also, Gen Alpha, it says here on Wikipedia, not Gen Z. Sorry, Gen Z, did not mean to attribute that one to you. So
sorry, Gen Alpha, for not giving you credit.
I'm sorry, Jen Alpha, for not giving you credit. Yeah, so I think...
Fuck you, all you young people. There you go. Let's just round that off nicely.
Yeah. But there we go. It's not only is it beyond our age of interest, but it's like, Blue's Clues level of, you know...
No, but when people our age take the slang of much younger generations and use it casually, it does make us look very cool.
Skibbity to that.
Skibbity, skibbity.
I mean, isn't that like a Cab Calloway scat thing?
Kind of,
yeah.
What's Blue's Clues level thing? What does that mean?
You lost age-wise. Like, I'm just thinking, like, it's just, it's like...
No, right,
it's
right.
Not...
No.
So it's so...
Blue's Clues is a cartoon for young people that... existed a while.
Right, gotcha.
Yeah, Thomas the Tank Engine, maybe. Or maybe a bit older than Thomas the Tank Engine. Berners Watch audience, maybe, you know?
I don't know. I never
don't mention that, you'll break the video.
Oh, but well, Berners Watch actually has a relatively broad age range, I think. It's one of those programs that, because it was on linear telly, like you need to
it depends on the age of your siblings, because I had younger sisters, so I saw a lot of stuff that was for the millennials, you know, like kids stuff that was for millennials and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like Bernard's Watch and The Queen's Nose, they were a bit young for me, but I ended up watching them because of my sisters and, you know, enjoying them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like with Lucy, she's the youngest of three sisters. Her two sisters are substantially older than her. So she exists very much in a Gen X kind of...
Yeah, my sisters have got that too, yeah.
Yeah.
So
you get the mixture
Gen X sort of happening.
Yeah.
Spread spectrum, if you will.
Yeah.
Out of everybody's pockets.
Out of everybody's pockets. Skibbity doodah.
What's it got in its pockets is...
Oh, we don't do Lord of the Rings references here. Come on, Hamish.
No. That's a Hobbit, my friend.
Look, it's Lord of the Rings, extended universe.
Yeah. I mean,
I like Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Fuck off.
Well, you shouldn't. It's very bad.
What do you think of the films, Drew? The Peter Jackson films?
Very bad.
What do you think of the books?
I've never actually watched them.
Very, very. The books are worse. The films are fucking terrible, but the books are even worse.
Do you remember a program that was done
very clever man, like his writings, like his non-fiction writings about, because I mean he was a historiographer,
a linguist
and historiographer, yeah. So what he was doing with Lord of the Rings and its relationship with Beowulf, and what the things he had to say about Beowulf, the things he had to say about the practice of history and how we're doing it all wrong, all incredibly interesting. And Lord of the Rings fits into that in an interesting way. But actually reading it as a novel, so shit.
Drew's frozen. Oh no, he's come back.
I think Tolkien
had come down and zapped him or something.
Well, one of my very close friends is a Tolkien scholar who is very into Tolkien, and
like a mage or wizard or something.
Tolkien scholar. Oh, very good. I see what you did there.
Do you remember a show? It didn't have that many series with Paul Merton on, who seems to get mentioned a weirdly large amount on this podcast. Was it Marcus Brigstocke or something? I can't remember now. It's called I've Never Seen Star Wars.
That was, I think, Marcus Brigstocke.
Yeah, the one I'm thinking of is Paul Merton was the guy in the hot seat.
Because it was a radio show as well, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, cool. Yeah, and... It's like everyone's got that, like, I've never seen a big cultural phenomenon, and Lord of the Rings is my win on that one. Despite being quite fond of medieval fun. Not seen the films. Oh, right. I've seen like first 20 minutes of the first film and then I fell asleep.
Oh right.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
If you do, they're diminishing returns, the films. The first one's quite good, the second one's not terrible, the third one's
None of those words gave me a description on what to expect. The first one's not terrible. What do you say? The first one's okay. The second one's not terrible. And the third one's...
Yeah, that's it. But The Hobbit is not good. They shouldn't have stretched it out like that. It did not need it. It could have been two parts maybe to make a decent go at the things in the book.
Well, the Lord of the Rings, they took three books and made it into three films. And honestly, that could have been more films. That could have been six films quite easily.
It's not three books.
It's six books, is it?
Yeah, six books.
I thought it was three books.
No, it's three volumes usually. Or three volumes, but it's six books. The actual sections are six. There's six sections to the book.
But with The Hobbit, they took one book and stretched it out into three films, which really doesn't work.
Yeah, especially not by the third one. Fucking hell.
Also, I think Peter Jackson is a very bad director. I think he's got some very specific talents, and they come from... Because before Lord of the Rings, he made like very low-budget like horror stuff. And I think it shows. Like,
some of that was quite good. I quite liked some of his early stuff. Anyway, The Frighteners as well. Marcus Brigstocke hosted for a series. And then Joe Brand hosted one special episode.
I like Joe Brand.
Yeah, I like Joe Brand a lot. The guests were Clive Anderson, John Humphries, Rory McGrath, Emily Maitlis, Hugh Dennis, Nigel Havers, David Davis, that one, yeah, the cunt, Esther Ranson, and Stephen Fry was the one on the special one. So no, Paul Merton wasn't involved in that at all.
Oh my God, what the hell? I just had a completely false memory.
Well, there is the radio series, which has 6 series and 36 episodes, which is quite a lot more. Hosted by Marcus Brigstock. I'd imagine if I go through there, I'll find his name somewhere.
Paul Martin is like, he lives in the BBC Radio 4 studio.
Yeah.
Just like, so he'll be like walking down the corridor and he'd been pulled in.
Actually, I don't really see him. Hang on.
That I don't have a clue.
No, he's not even been on the radio one. He's on loads of, I mean, he is on loads of stuff on Radio 4.
Oh, he did do Room 101, which is probably...
Room 101, it might be what you're thinking about, yeah.
Which is kind of the same show.
Similar
maybe.
Sort of idea, but most of that was Frank Skinner, wasn't it? And it was like...
The big ones I've never seen, I think, are Fight Club and Seven.
I've not seen Seven.
Because they both look shit.
Fight Club's interesting.
I thought Fight Club was massively overhyped, and it's not as clever as they think it is.
It felt that way. It's like when I finally got round to watching The Matrix, and I was like, "This seems
first
overhyped.
Right.
It seems fucking abysmal."
First one was okay. It was not amazing, but it was okay.
It feels like a movie for school shooters.
I mean, it was a movie for school
shooters. Yeah, it kind of was. Yeah. It was of its time, and you know, I've never seen it since.
Which is interesting because you'd think Fight Club.
Anyway,
we're
going way off.
But it's the alt-right movie that completely misinterpreted the themes of the show.
Well, it's got its imagery. It's the long coats, and I've got so many guns, and you know, it's that, you know, sunglasses during the day, like it's all a bit.
Yeah, well, yeah, well, the same new as, one is what was the other thing around the same time? There was a couple of things. There was The Crow around the same time, and there was...
Sin City films?
No, that was a bit later.
That was a bit later?
That was shite.
They were good. I liked them at the time. I think now they're a bit juvenile.
I didn't know there was more than Sin City film. Blade was the other one. You know, it was kind of like
Blade's far more tongue in cheek though. I like
Blade. Yeah. But there was a lot of imagery that was similar.
Imagery wise, yeah, definitely.
That's
what
I was meaning.
I mean, Deus Ex has it too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
But the interesting thing about the fourth Matrix film is whilst it wasn't particularly
four of them.
I don't know. There was a fourth one. Recently, wasn't it? It was like a later on one. Yeah, yeah.
So the Wachowski twins, basically, or siblings or whatever, they were basically roped in relatively coercively by Warner Brothers to do a fourth Matrix film. And so they did it a little bit kicking and screaming. And so the film is not particularly good. It even regularly references itself the fact that it doesn't need to exist. but it also is like, okay, here's the things we probably would have done differently from the original. And one of the things I do like is that they actually added quite a bit of color into it.
Okay.
Just because it is a film without color, but I don't really have time for that nowadays.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Well, as the Mimi woman says. See, I know a young people's meme. That's quite a young people. She's not. She's an older woman, but the meme's quite
young.
You
are full old man yelling at Cloud in that.
I know the young people.
Fuck you all. Right. One thing I want to know. Do you guys have any more to fill in? Because
my notes are depleted.
Christopher, give me your Sunday name because you've miffed me.
I've got some more things to say about Fight Club.
I meant of the Expanse episode.
Because I think whilst it's not hugely clever, I do think that it. There's a lot of emotional stuff in it that I think says something, if you know what I mean.
I've never
like
seen it,
disenfranchised men and stuff.
I think I know as much as you can know about it without having seen it. You know what I mean?
Like you know,
do you
I
both
think,
know
like,
the, you've both said you've not seen Seven.
No, I've not seen Seven.
So do you know the ending of Seven from memes and things?
No.
I did at some point, but I've forgotten.
No, I just wondered.
My main objection...
No spoilers, anybody, just in case something comes up, we use it in the future.
My main objection to Seven was the use of the letter Seven
in the middle
instead of the letter V. Same as the Fourth as well, the game The Fourth, that used a 4 instead of an E in the word thief, which doesn't even make any fucking sense.
No, it's the letter 3 sense. That is used
It's either The Fourth or Thiaf.
Thiaf, yeah.
I'm not sure what game you're even talking about.
Thief 4. T-I-H-I-4.
Hang on a minute. Thief 4 was just called Thief TM.
Well, a Thief 4. One of the Thief 4s. I think it's like Hitman. I think it's got multiple 4s.
Yeah, no, they did the Hitman thing. I didn't realize they used a 4.
I'm going to check my facts.
Oh, my goodness.
Complete shit.
We've got another controversy brewing, and it's...
Yeah, Thief. Thief is just called Thief.
Isn't the Thief 3 got something in it? Like
they definitely styled it with a 4 in it. Because I Wikipedia'd The Fourth, and it took me to the page. There's a redirect, so something is happening there.
Thief
games.
See, I like some of the aesthetics of it, but it was such an out-of-character game that it kind of fell.
Here we go. Thief was initially announced in 2009 under the working title Thief 4, stylized as the Cypher 4.
But it didn't make it to shelves like that.
After rumors of development, I think people reacted very poorly to that and they changed it maybe. But yeah. There was marketing with the 4th.
You look like you fit right into that chair there, Drew. Like the lighting and everything.
Yeah, no, it does fit, doesn't it? Yeah.
Mm. Shows the ting.
It looks much more comfortable than my actual chair, which is upsetting.
We can talk a little bit about the consoleification of the Fourth Thief game, when really, like, the structure of the Thief games was so, like, it was so well defined, particularly in the third one, by the time they got to the third one, that they could have just made another the third one, maybe a bit of graphics, bit of lighting.
I think again, it's in that category of games, you know, the whatever sim or whatever they call it, immersive sim. They just don't sell is the problem. They needed to broaden the appeal.
Well, it
didn't
sell.
It didn't work. But you know, they had to try something. I guess.
But there was that time. Hitman Absolution did it. Thief 4 did it, and a whole bunch of other games did it. Where it was just a corridor game, corridor shooter, corridor stealther, and the Hitman Absolution one was an out of character Hitman game. Is not terrible, but it would have definitely been remedied by having a more, like, they went back to the more open levels, non-linear levels, and that fixed all of the complaints.
Yeah.
Are you into Thief then, Chris? It seems like a Chris game.
1, 2, and 3, yes. Right. I don't give a shit about
it. Did you ever play a game called IGI?
I don't think I did.
Right, I think you would like that as well. Do you know that one, Chris, Andrew?
Yeah.
IGI and IGI 2, yeah.
It's not the
I didn't have patience for them.
Was it called Project IGI?
No, it's called IGI as an I go in, is what it stood for.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so it's not the International Genealogical Index.
No.
That's a lot of fun too.
Yep.
Anyway, enough about video games that I don't care about. How any more expanse notes?
Yes.
I'm interested to see what the Nucleus is all about.
Yeah, Holden obviously.
Oh yeah, Holden just jumps off the top.
Yeah,
that's where. No, could we have a screenshot of that just before he jumps? Because I have a couple of notes on that. Well, one note in particular. Well, what? Yeah, one note. The other bit was the Rocinante name is sprayed back on. We know that though. But if you capture that very end bit for us again, Chris, and I've put Chris full screen for this.
Okay, so I don't know.
You're the star of the show for a minute, Christopher.
Okay, is this it, or do you want it to
yes.
be a bit
Yes, could
more...
you move your head a wee bit? Could you go a couple of frames further on?
I've got this one here. I can do that.
Shame we can't put a video in the background and just,
Oh, I thought he was. I just thought he was. Pausing.
No, this is...
Because see what his right hand is in that shot? There it is, perfect. That looks like stars painted on the ship.
Hang on, let's have a look. Where?
Painted on the ship.
To the left, just right. On the picture we're looking at now, below his right foot.
Hang on. I need to look at this closer.
Just click on Chris and you'll see it.
It's it's put you center again now. There we go. Okay. Yeah. I see. Right.
Bring Chris up as your main screen on Jitsi and you'll see it. Yeah.
That's like a kills thing.
That's what I thought. So I was wondering. Seems to be five of them I wrote down. Five. Yeah, five. Or
maybe alternatively, somebody's reviewed the ship.
Thank you, Chris. You can go back.
Those are stars. Oh, right. It took me a while to spot them.
Yeah. So what I'm thinking is, what are they counting as kills? That may be homework for next time, you know.
They're very poorly.
I just wanted to confirm it.
Stars.
They are.
That looks like a person that's fallen off the star line.
Yeah.
Is that how many ships they've taken down or people?
They don't seem like those kind of people who would celebrate their kills in that way. Like
Amos,
that would make
maybe.
Them uncomfortable, isn't
actually,
it?
No, I think Alex would.
Even Amos. Alex might. Yeah, yeah.
And that may explain why it's so badly painted as well, because Alex is shit.
Oh, yeah, because Amos can paint quite well on the ship, can't he?
Yeah.
To be honest, I always say, like, military men should wear the number of kills on their badges.
Well, how about, does it have to be number of kills, or could it be for like a military cook, how many meals they cooked, or how many people they've served?
They have to be little chef's hats.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
it.
You've
got
to hold
something in little chef hats, that's unbelievable.
You get
I'm assuming you mean in small stylized versions of a chef's hat, rather than little chefs. Like the chain,
I miss little chef. And yeah, somebody working in logistics, how many Excel spreadsheets they've created.
But that's it, like, you know, I want to know, have you been just working the kitchens and sucking off your commanding officer, or have you actually been doing
how many dicks sucked?
Yeah. This, you know, I like, they've got all these really weird titles now that don't ask, do tell. Don't ask, do tell. yeah, you know, if you're a driver, how many lifts given? Get your Uber star rating.
Oh, do you know what? Like, you know how I'm thinking very obvious. You know how much our government spend on the military versus, you know, the rest of the public sector.
Yeah.
They should be forced, all the things that they say are good enough for us, they should be forced to use in the military. So all of their transportation should be done by Uber.
Yeah.
Well, what about Stagecoach?
Don't know what that is.
It's a bus company.
Bus service.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, yeah, maybe. Yeah, a bit of that. Yeah, all their catering should be done by, I don't know, Subway or whatever.
Greg's.
I like Subway.
Subway's fine.
Greg's. Yeah. Should be Greg's.
Subway's a bit expensive. Yeah. Greg's is like Greg's is nice and cheap, and they do good vegan options. A good Greg's is fucking excellent. But sometimes the things with Greg's, I often find, is that there can be a discrepancy from Greg's to Greg's to Greg's.
Yes. Subway has that very American thing where it's very standardized, very regularized, right?
Yeah. Like, the bigger the Greg's, the better the Greg's, in my opinion. But they'll do the Greg's sausage roll anywhere, so that's generally all right. If you're a vegetarian, not a vegan, You're laughing, but so there's some decent vegan. They do for £1.20. They do a little box of potato wedges. I don't know why I'm miming it. They're actually really quite
because
nice.
Food. You know what you do with food? You take it from the container that you've got it in, and you put it in your mouth.
Stick it up your arse.
That's out in the middle.
Do you know there's two? Right. I mean, I knew this as well, but I'm guessing you two didn't. But you know, do you know there's two connections between the TV show and the band Rush?
Oh, who fucking cares? Go on, blather on about your old man music.
Anyway, because of the literary references, the Rocinante, on my ship, the Rocinante, blah, 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 is a line in a Rush song from 1977. And also the three drones on the ship in the TV show are named after the three members of Rush.
That's very cool. That's very
despite
cool.
Despite the fact they were actually quite slow for drones, they weren't, you know, just pop it. Because if you rush, you break.
Very, very good.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
Very good, Chris.
This actually forms a connection with the Trailer Park Boys, because Rush makes several appearances in the Trailer Park Boys.
Oh, right. I'm trying to. No, the reason I'm looking up the Rocinante is I'm trying to find anything about these stars. But
five kills seems about right. Like, I can't remember, but if, you know, for vague memory of the show, it seems about right.
Yeah, it seems about right. Yeah, yeah.
Armament. Battles. Does it mention battles anywhere? Formerly of the MCRN and now owned by Rossi Corp.
Hey!
Which is four people, as we know.
Who owns the behemoth? Is it? Is
That's
it
a good Tyco? Question, because presumably the builders of the ship, i.e. Tyco, didn't just build it out of the good of their heart. You know, they must have been paid for something of that. So how the hell are they, you know, how did they get to take it over?
You know, before you've delivered something, I would imagine, I'm no lawyer, but I would imagine before you have delivered something, you probably own it. Like, they probably owe the Mormons.
They probably owe the money back.
They owe the Mormons a ship or money.
Or money back, yeah, yeah.
But until delivered, I would imagine, yeah. I was actually thinking about that during this episode.
Yeah. Or is this actually now a Mormon ship and everyone's a Mormon? They just act like belters.
That could be a loophole. Or maybe the contract just says deliver to the Mormons. So they all convert to Mormonism and then they've done that.
They've taken the ship, yeah, yeah.
Maybe wouldn't it be funny if the Mormons actually showed up with another ship from Jules Pierre Mao, like from Protogen?
In the Protogen Star
version of the, yeah. And then they go through the thing because that's, you know, like the. I wonder what would happen actually if the ring came up and Tyco was still building the behemoth for the Mormons.
Yeah.
And the Mormons were like, okay, we're ready to go. And then the ring opens up and they'd be like,
yeah, yeah.
Do you reckon the Mormons would be tempted to be like, maybe this is a sign? That would be a sign from God. How could you not interpret that as a sign from God?
Yeah, yeah.
You've just built your cathedral, it's ready to go. And then suddenly the window into the new world literally opens up before you, and you think, this is obviously a sign from God. We have to go into the abyss, and
that makes sense.
Got on his poker face.
Something else I was going to mention is that the behemoth doesn't have the ship, the figurehead.
Noticed that as well. Yeah. The Tutor, Gabriel. Yeah.
So they've taken it away. It looks like what they've done is replaced it with like a more traditional sort of array of antennae for communication.
But that statue probably had quite a lot of gold in it. So they
was
like,
it really gold?
I mean, I would imagine if it's a cathedral, like, why not gold?
Oh yeah, I suppose.
You know,
in that case, they probably scrapped it and ran off with it.
Yeah,
I tell you what, you know, in my mind canon. Diogo pinched it and went.
I was just going to say, yeah. Lieutenant Diogo made off with it.
Lieutenant, isn't he? I keep forgetting that.
Or maybe Diogo would just stick a traffic cone on its head.
Yeah.
How the fuck did you get a traffic cone this far into space?
How do you know what a traffic cone is?
Where did you get this weird orange wizard's hat from?
Where did you get this 3D print of the VLC logo from, and why is it on
Where did you get that?
Oh yeah, Cotton Eye Joe's making a comeback amongst the Jan Alpha memes.
Fucking
understandable.
Hell.
Understandable. Mm.
Oh,
I love dancing to that song in the club.
It's a very memeable. I mean, the song is a meme in itself. It has that feel.
It is a meme, yeah. And you know, yeah.
Hamish is.
I keep meaning.
The Cotton Eye Joe, Chris. How much better than Rush are they?
I mean, I don't know Rush, so I couldn't possibly say. But
Cotton Eye Joe is the name of the song, I believe, not the the artist.
Yeah. It's Frankenstein's monster. I don't know who did Cotton Eye Joe, as in.
Well, I'm not going to help you guys.
Is it Cotton? Is it literally Mr. Joe?
I can't remember. I know, when you say it, I'll know it. But
oh, the Rednecks. R-E-D-N-E-X, the Rednecks.
Did not know that. Never heard
There were a lot in that era of music, like the early 2000s. There was a lot of music.
Yeah.
There was a lot of shite.
Scatman.
There always is a lot of that stuff, though. Every year has got it. We had like things like the fucking the Birdie song, and
I do think there are certain points where culture culture feel done?
Cotton Eye Joe and then was stuff worse. Like,
stuff like that comes out. No, the Birdie song is worse than Cotton Eye Joe. Fuck me.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
The Birdie song.
Chris, don't.
Agadoo.
Yep. There you go. Well, you know the reaction to Agadoo, the chicken song by Spitting Image.
Oh yeah.
That is good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, good in a. It's in the vein of those songs, but it says more about those songs.
In the olden days of the internet, when Napster first came out, and Napster was, you know, for downloading music and also had chat rooms, I went into an alt-rock chat room and convinced a bunch of Americans that I'd heard of this new cool alternative band called Black Lace, and you should have a listen to Agadoo. I've literally got 30 or 40 of them to download it.
Did you also get banned immediately afterwards?
No, they saw the humor in the situation. Thank you.
Did you ever get...
So you were a pre-Rick Roller, were you? Is that before Rick Roller?
They might call him a prick roller.
Yay!
Definitely a prick.
Did you ever have the misfortune of hearing the fast food song by the Fast Food Rockers?
No, never heard that. I'm not the biggest fan of music to begin with. A novelty / comedy music just grinds my fucking gears.
I think the Fast Food Rockers might very well
decide. Al Yankovic is a fucking
delight.
He's done a few bangers.
No, that comedy music is worse than the devil.
Well, the devil doesn't exist, but comedy music does. So,
non-atheist. Yeah. I mean, I think music can have a sense of humor.
Yes, this is going to be a worm up. But I feel about comedy the same way I feel about poetry. When you abstract it out and put it on its own, it fails. It can't hold itself up. So, you know, a poem written as a poem, not a fan. A comedy, like a stand-up comedy thing for an hour, you know, it's a weird thing to do. Like, you go into a room and this man's job or this woman, you know, usually a man, is to make you laugh for an hour. And I can't sustain laughing for that long. I can't sustain humor for that long. I can laugh at something for like maybe 10 minutes and then I'm kind of fucking exhausted and I want some sincerity or... So there's that. But I love poetic writing. I love prose that has some poetry to it and I love things that have some comedy to them. But I don't think these things, I don't think we serve ourselves when we abstract them out and try and make them stand on their own.
Yeah, that's very, like, that makes a lot of sense, even though I don't 100%.
I know there are people who love poetry and the people who love just watching comedy, just comedy. You know, I need some sincerity and I need impact. You know, when you just read poetry, I'm like, just say what you fucking mean. Sincerity, though.
Like...
For sure. But like the most mainstream form of stand-up comedy is just joke. You know, no sincerity. I know there's the comedians who do get very sincere and stuff, of course.
Yeah, but then and also
this isn't to say there's no good comedy or there's no good poetry. I just think it's not. I would say the same about fine art. You know, art should run through all that we do. It shouldn't be this thing we extract out and go, this is art. That isn't. I think it falls flat.
Oh, I fully agree with that one. And since you've dropped out of art school twice, you're by far and away double qualified than most artists, really.
I'm so qualified to work at McDonald's.